Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I am so honored today to be joined by a friend and colleague in the field, Dr. Sue Starks. She is Professor of Education and Chair of the Early Childhood Department at Concordia University, St. Paul. And back a few years back, we were housed at Concordia and got to see Sue way more than we do now. But I'm so excited to have you with us, Sue. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It is kind of weird thinking that you guys were there and then you're gone, but I'm glad we get to interact and
yes.
still come on some important topics.
Like important, play. Yes. And play is probably I know it's one of your personal favorites, and I have to say it's one of mine as well. When you think about young children, and our first part of our podcast series, we're going to talk about infants and toddlers. And I think some people, when you say play in infants and toddlers in that age group, they might not realize how much we can do as adults in their setting to facilitate and support but not overwhelm their play. Would you agree?
Yes, because I think the hard part is sometimes, well, at all levels of play, sometimes adults just kind of decide to take over. And I think that's a disservice to kids because, especially when they're really young, a lot of it is exploration and tapping into their senses. And with infants and toddlers, all of that happens within the context of a relationship. So it's the relationship that they have to have with that adult, whoever those individuals are that are significant adults in their lives. And that's really within the context of that bubble where the play and the learning and the development really, really can take off. So it's really, it's the interaction patterns, it's our conversations, it's building those relationships. But with infants, you start with the whole attachment component. They have to be attached to somebody, and there has to be that emphasis on serve and return. I don't think that goes away with toddlers either, but that whole where they say something, or not say something, because it's cries and noises and things like that and babbling with little ones, but there's a response from that adult to them. And that joint attention that comes from that serve and return process of that back and forth of they're Googling and then we're going to respond to that. And then that gets a little bit louder and then we're going to respond to that. That's really the nature of play. And a lot of it is language when kids are little. It's like language appropriate play, and a lot of things that have to do with their physical development as well when they're really, really small. But if they're not attached and they don't feel connected to an adult, they can do some of those things, but it doesn't go to the extent that it could if they're connected to an adult. So we have to, as teachers within childcare centers and programs, have to realize that we are significant adults in the lives of those kids, as well as helping their families really realize that they're nurturing all that along in the context of that relationship.
Yes. Oh, yes. And so as you're, you know, emphasizing how critical that is, what are some things that you tell your students, tell others in the field when you're speaking and when you're writing articles or whatever, you know, what are some of the key components for that healthy attachment between caregiver and child in the early childhood setting, whether it's family childcare or center-based?
I think a lot of it starts with trust, just having them know that even with a little baby, they sense that feeling of, can I trust this person? Is this person going to be there for me? And can I, if I veer off a little bit from them, do I know that they're still going to be kind of in my aura and kind of watching and listening and noticing what I'm doing? But then when I kind of have to have a little sense of security, can I touch back and kind of tag that person and then know that that person is going to be there and responding to them? So I think that whole notion of just being that safe place for them to come to and to fall, and that you're really in the moment and noticing them. So they see you looking at them and they notice that you're listening to them. And when we talk about listening, it's like listening with our ears, but we also have to listen with our eyes with young children, because that's a direct message to them of whether we're tuned into them or not. So just really being in the moment with them, watching them, giving them space. If they come back to us, that we're there to kind of engage and expand and extend. But sometimes you're just kind of watching to see what it is that they're going to do. Always safety is a big, huge for a huge thing for little ones, but just kind of letting them be able to grapple with things and to kind of go off and try things out. But they do tend to do that. I'll go off, but then I'm going to come back because I need that safety, security. I'll go off and I'll do something, and then I'm going to come back because I need to kind of check in. And as long as we're there, and I know that days are busy and there's like lots of craziness that goes on within programs, and sometimes you can't do that to the 100% that you want to, but as much as you can, just really be in the moment and be there for kids and to be an active, interactive part of their process. But that builds trust. They know that we're there for them. We know they know that they care for us. They know that they can count on us. And as they get older, that doesn't go away. That need for trust in a relationship still continues. But with little ones, it's just you're just building those foundations, and I think that's critical.
Sure. And also going back to your point about safety too, that's a big issue. And hopefully in the settings that we're providing care in, we've taken the time ahead of time. Yeah. Before the children arrive, before they're in that space, to set up the environment in a way that allows for what you're describing, that safe exploration of young children so that they can go out and explore, but then check back, go out and explore. And it's not this kind of hovering, you know, I think you said it early on in our conversation, you're just letting children take the lead and letting them be kids and play. It's a fine line though, especially with infants, I think, and toddlers, because you are so concerned about safety and about the choices they're making. And I think it's easy to get caught in the, oh, I have to be this bubble of safety around you, which can sometimes show kids that things are unsafe and scary, and that might deter them from exploring. What do you suggest to that?
I think you are going to have a lot of that because you have different personalities and different temperaments. And some kids are just go-getters from infant, toddler all the way on. They're just, it's almost like, just try to hold me back is kind of their attitude. But I think we have to try not to hover. Safety is a big thing, but we also have to let kids explore. And I think if we set up the environment to the best of our ability so that things are safe, things are developmentally appropriate for the age level and the developmental level of kids, I think that's important. I think sometimes with what you were talking about, the hovering, especially with toddlers, when they're just kind of embarking on that ability to try to use climbing apparatuses to the maybe our preschool level, but I think there's some kids are very able to do those things and some kids aren't. We have to really, really know our kids so that we know, okay, this one really probably does need like a crash helmet and a safety suit. This one is probably okay to do it on their own. So I think differentiating how we interact and the responsiveness and the things that we allow kids to do based on what we know about them is important, but we can't always be just hovering and being there like ready to catch them. I mean, sometimes maybe that's a good thing, but they learn, I think, resilience, and they learn to keep kind of trying at different things. If they feel, again, they're connected to you, you're there. So I have you in case something goes wrong, but you're also going to allow me to try out different things. Now, temperament wise, some kids aren't going to do that, and that's okay. But if you have those little go-getters, again, I think just keeping things that are tied directly to the individual nature of that particular child, rather than saying for this whole group of kids in this infant program or this toddler program, these are the like hard and fast rules that work for all of them, because we are holding kids back sometimes when we aren't allowing them to do what they're able to do.
Oh yeah. And that makes me think of just even how we set up routines and how, we are trying to be responsive to their physical needs each day, which in the infant room, that's really what it's all about, is meeting those physical needs. And then as they start to become a little more ambulatory and they start to move around a little bit more, then we're doing more of the maybe setting the toy a little bit further away from them and they have to scootish over. We're noticing, you know, back to what you were saying, we're noticing with our eyes and our ears, they're looking at one of their peers. They seem interested in, and that's their beginning of interaction. Yep. And so can you talk a little bit about how fostering those connections can really help a child develop some play skills, even in infancy?
I think with like really, really little ones, they do notice a lot more, I think, than we give them credit for. And they are sometimes watching other individuals, sometimes trying to move closer to other individuals. Then sometimes when they're like right side by side, you know, they'll take things from each other, which I mean, I always think it's like the beginning of negotiation and communication that's going to start, because they're going to use that for a lifetime. But I think when you're there, you're all automatically providing, again, if you think in terms of, so you've got two little ones that are right next to each other and someone has like a little rattle in their hand and another one kind of reaches over and grabs it, that you're beginning to plant the seeds of the language to just say, you know what, like Katie wasn't done with that yet. Let's give her this back and then let's find something else for you to play with. But that if they're noticing the same thing and they're interested in the same thing, I think building on that and feeding that language in the conversation, the process of what they're doing, they kind of learn that camaraderie. And it, even with, it's amazing, I think, with infants, how they already kind of know, like, these are my little friends and these are the people that I hang with. And they notice who's here and who's doing what and where they're going. And if something looks interesting and they're mobile, they're off and running over to where somebody else is doing something, or they hear like a noise that someone's making over there. And even when they're, maybe you've got a mobile one, because that's always with infants, you always have these little teeny ones that are not mobile at all. And then you have the older ones that are kind of like on the go all the time, but they're just always watching and they're always listening. And I think anytime we can kind of break that down just to say, hey, I see you looking at, you know, Joey over there doing whatever. I see you looking at Susie over here doing this. And would you like to do that too? And maybe if they're not mobile, move them over to that area so they can kind of be in that space where something is going on that caught their eye and caught their attention. Maybe they want to stay there, maybe they don't, but at least giving them that outlet. But so much of it to me goes back to noticing kids and really being in tuned into kids. If you know kind of who they are, where they are developmentally, what they're able to do, the physical thing is always a big thing. That feeds right back to the safety thing, because if it's physically going to put them in a position where it isn't safe for them, we have to be thinking about that. But when all those things are kind of taken care of within the environment, then I think we just have to be in the moment with kids as much as we can and just kind of feed those processes along with them. But so much within early childhood programs in general, the environment is really the curriculum. So it's the people that are in that environment. It's the interactions and the conversations that take play. It's the playing and the reading and the singing and all those things that are building that language. It's the materials that we have that are there for them because of the developmental stage that they're at. It's knowing their physical abilities to say, these little ones need tummy time. These little ones are kind of doing that little rocky motion. So let's give them something and extend it a little bit, put it out so that they have to do the physical component to get up there. If they're starting to stand on things, giving them safe things to be able to stand on and walk along or to start to push and walk behind. So just knowing your kids and knowing all the developmental levels that they're at, and then being an engaging, responsive partner in their play and their conversations. And again, with little ones, you're feeding so much of that language. That's really our role as how I see it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up environment, because that is, as you said, that's really the curriculum that is everything's built on. And we are there as the adults to fill in the blanks for the young ones that don't have the words. And so you were, you know, giving some great examples of that. When you think about materials in that early childhood space, specifically for toddlers and infants, what are some things that really stand out to you as key to be part of that environment? I mean, you mentioned a few of them in just different things that you said in the last few minutes, but I'll let you highlight some of those key pieces.
To me, books is always a big one, because I'm like a complete literacy person. So I think like books, because even with infants, they start to bring over the favorite ones that, and maybe in our mind, and toddlers do the same thing. Because when I go into the toddler room on campus, you sit in there on the floor, and within 60 seconds, there's a kid that's bringing you a book that they want you to read. And yes, a lot of times it's the same book over and over and over again. But I think that goes back to that relationship and that attunement, that we have to make sure we're going to read that book for the 18th time today. And it's going to be the best thing that we've ever shared with them. And we're going to be really, really excited about sharing it with them. But I think books are a huge thing. I think motor things at both infants and toddlers, because even if they're inside, they have to have that ability and those outlets to be able to use their physical selves that they're just kind of growing into and figuring out what they can and cannot do. So just saying that, well, the only time we're going to do movement things is when we're in a gym space or when we're outside, that doesn't really work for those really young kids because they spend a lot of times in kind of their home room. So there have to be physical outlets for them. And again, things that are going to tag along to all those developmental levels. I think anything that invites their senses, so things that they can touch and that have texture and things that they can listen to. I'm not a huge fan of things that are just make a lot of noise and do a lot of things for kids, because I just think that that's more of an entertainment value in a way, but the kids aren't really getting that much out of the process. So I think just hands-on things. But you think about like things that squish and make noise and that have like a sensory feel to them, things that they can smell, things that they can kind of like walk on or crawl on. Anything like that to me is like sensory things. But then I think they also have to have things that are good for fine motor and things that are good for their large motor. So things that stack and things that build, things they can poke things into, ramps they can, you know, push cars down. And I think creative things that are not set in stone, that are really just used, allowing them to use materials in the ways that they want to. And I think that goes back to noticing then too, because sometimes, especially as they get into that toddler stage, they start using materials that we maybe had put them out thinking that they were going to do this with them, but then they turn it in a whole different direction and do something different, and following their lead and noticing what they're doing again, and then saying, hey, you know, what if we add this? Is this going to give them another outlet and extend their play? I think that, again, is being that kind of co-partner in play really, really helps at both of those age levels.
One thing that I'm thinking of too is providing, and you mentioned this, in just other conversations that we've had, you know, appropriate challenges for kids, allowing them the opportunity to fail or get frustrated somewhat, but we're there as that adult, once again, secure base, that safety net. So setting kids up for opportunities to have kind of those next level challenges. Do you know what I'm getting at there?
I think it's really important because our world, and we all know this as we grow, the challenge of frustration doesn't go away. And we all are going to make mistakes, and we're all going to have to learn from those things. So I think starting that process out early and kind of helping them realize that I go back to growth mindset and like versus a fixed mindset. So even with infants and toddlers, we can start kind of giving them those foundational skills for having a growth mindset, so that I tried this and maybe it was an epic fail and it didn't go same way as teachers. It didn't go the exact same the way that I thought it was going to go, but then they can try it again. And I think that's when you think about infants and toddlers, revisiting those experiences that maybe you thought the child was ready for it, and maybe they were to a certain extent, but not all the way. Then we wait a little while and then we revisit that experience and we kind of build that in again. We can't just say because they didn't find success at this particular moment in time that, well, they're just not ready for that. We're just going to leave it because we don't want them to fail. We have to, again, re-expose them to that, again, be there so that we're that center and we're that support person for them, and then just kind of help them build that perseverance and to build that stamina to keep going. And the more exposure they have with that within the context of that relationship where they just really, really feel like, hey, you know, I can try this and I can do this, and they'll find success with it. Not with everything, but everybody doesn't find success with everything. But I think that whole notion of helping them from very, very young ages on know that mistakes are part of a process of learning, and that that's really how we learn and how we grow. So I think we can model that, and I think we can just by noticing what they're doing kind of build in times for them to expand and extend, and then if they mess up with things, then so be it. We build it and use it as a teachable moment.
Truly. And you know, when I'm thinking, so as we kind of wrap up part one on infants and toddlers, and we're going to do a part two with you, Sue, that's going to focus on preschoolers and play. But when you think about if you were setting up a space for infants and toddlers to really thrive throughout their day, would you build in a lot of structure? I know we've had conversations about what do toddlers need? You know, do they need calendar? Do they need all those group times and long group times? And so if you, in our just our last few minutes on this one, what would you say, oh man, this would be the best day ever for a toddler or an infant if these components would be part of that time?
I think in terms of infants, and I can't say I laugh because it kind of makes my heart hurt. But when you go into programs where they have almost a scripted curriculum that's given to an infant teacher, I just, my mind does not wrap around that, because how do you say we have these little kids that are 6 weeks to, you know, 18 months of age, and they're all going to be super excited about learning about plants this week. But mm-hmm. these teachers in these programs are kind of given these things, and we can't plan for kids. The developmental range is too wide. We have to just give them open-ended experiences and lots of unstructured time and space, again, to be in the context of a relationship and just to learn and grow. Toddlers, I will say, drives me absolutely nuts, because we have a tendency to a lot of times water down preschool curriculum so that we feel like, well, they're just a little bit younger, so if we just, you know, make this a little bit easier, we can just kind of follow suit with that for toddlers. Toddlers don't need to practice calendar and don't need to practice like organized group times so that they'll be ready for those things for preschool. They just need to be allowed to be toddlers. And I've been in programs where they are trying to rotate toddlers through stations. And I'm like, toddlers were not really born to rotate. So I think we have to just, again, open-ended. There has to be a routine for kids, but I think within that structure, there also has to be fluidity so that we can kind of follow their lead and allow them to be kind of who they are. And they're very, very young. They're into their senses. They're into exploring. They're into doing. They're going to do a lot of messy mistake things that are part of their processes. But I think we embrace that and we mm-hmm. allow them to be an active part in that. That whole notion of getting kids ready, so getting infants ready to be toddlers and getting toddlers ready to be preschoolers and so forth, I think we lose sight of some of what kids really, really need at those developmental levels when we're always getting them ready for the next thing. It's like, why can't they just be 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and really embrace all that is about that their being at that developmental stage and at that kind of month mark of how old they are, and just allow them to be kids. So I think that answered your question, but I don't know.
I think so too. Well, and I love that thinking, you know, and I've said this many times too. We don't get a do-over for childhood. You get to mm-hmm. do it once. You get to be two one time. Yeah. And so why not let kids just revel in the being too and enjoying those moments? Well, Dr. Sue Starks, thank you for our time in part one, with just focusing on infants and toddlers and the development of their play and ways we can foster it. I look forward to having you back for part two.
Thank you so much. It was fun to be here.
And if anyone is looking for, any of our listeners are looking for more resources on this age group or other ideas related to healthy quality care and development for young children, you can go to our website, inclusivechildcare.org, or just reach out to us. We also love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.